We read Megillas Rus. Sadly, this year, it doesn't look like we're going to be reading it in shul. Some of us will be ruthless. Some of us will not be. But Josh Siegel will always have a Ruthie in his life and Mirtz Hashem for many years to come. And the bottom line is, we'll be reading Megillas Rus. So I want to go through just the beginning of the Megillah, the beginning of Megillas Rus, and I want to point out something which is very troubling and problematic, and also a big discussion amongst the different commentaries, the Gemaras, the Zohar, as to what the facts were. So we know that the Megillas Rus begins with a story where there was a terrible hunger in the land, Vayira al Ba'aretz, there was a terrible hunger in the land, and Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Kilion, leave Israel, and they travel to Moab. There's many reasons why they left, but the bottom line is they left. They shouldn't have left, but they left, and they come to Moab. And in Moab, Mahlon and Kilion end up marrying two Moabite princesses. One of them was Ruth, Arut, and the other one's name was Arpah. That's who they married. And we know eventually that both of them die. Mahlon and Kilion die. And Naomi goes back to the land of Israel. Ruth follows her, and that's where David HaMelech, King David, comes from. Arpah goes back home and rejoins her family in Moab. And we know one of the reasons that we read Megillas Rus is because Shavuot is the anniversary. It's the yahrzeit of David HaMelech, of King David. And therefore, we read about the humble beginnings of King David. He came from Ruth. He came from Ruth, from a convert, a Moabite princess that became a Jew. That's one of the reasons that we read Megillat Rut, amongst many. What I want to focus on is, what happened? What happened when Mahlon and Kilion, these two sons of Elimelech and Naomi, by the way, the Gemara teaches us that Elimelech was a leader of the Jewish people. He was considered one of the greats, as were both of his children, Mahlon and Kilion. But for whatever the reason is, they left the land of Israel. Some say that they didn't want to have to continue giving tzedakah. It was just, they were taxed out when it came to charity. So they moved out, they moved offshore. But they come there, and the two boys marry these two women. Did they marry non-Jewish women? Or did the two Jewish women convert? Did they have gavers? Did they have conversion? Again, the question is in the story, when Elimelech leaves Israel and he moves to Moab with his wife and his two sons, and they marry Moabite princesses, Ruth and Arpah, were those princesses Jews, or did they intermarry? This is a very big question. It's a big discussion. If they were Jews, clearly they converted. Did they convert for marriage, which is in itself a discussion of conversion for marriage in Judaism is a valid conversion? And if they didn't convert, so these two seemingly great Torah scholars just intermarry as soon as they leave Israel, what happens in Moab stays in Moab? Was it that type of thing? So let's look carefully at Megillas Rus as well as the commentaries and try to see what's happening. And we'll see there's going to be many conflicting messages as to whether they did convert, or the two fellows married non-Jewish women. So let's begin at the beginning of Megillas Rus. Right near the beginning of Megillas Rus. So it says they took Nashim Nachrios. They took Nachrios. What does Nachrios mean? Strangers, foreigners. And the Targum says that they took non-Jewish women. And as a matter of fact, the Targum says because of their high spiritual level, they were punished more severely than a person who intermarries, and that's why Mahlon and Kilion died. So right away we have in the Targum, who translate that they took Nashim Nachrios, to mean that they took literally a Nachri, often in the vernacular of the Torah means a non-Jewish woman. They married non-Jewish women, which is troubling because it seems from the Gemara that they were on a very lofty level, and all of a sudden they fell pretty quickly. So that's number one. Similarly, after they die, these two fellows die, and Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies as well, and she's a widow, and she's left all alone in a foreign land, and she decides to go back to Eretz Yisrael, to the land of Israel. Naomi says to the women, so Rus and Arpah, her two daughter-in-laws, follow her. And she says to them, no, Shva Yivimech Elama Bel Eloha, Eloheha. Each of you should go back to your nation, and you should go back to your gods. Now, if they converted, and before Mahlon and Kilion married them, they became Jews, how could Naomi tell them, go back home to your gods? She's telling them, go back to worship idols? They're Jews. How can you recommend a Jew that they go and they serve idols? It's a terrible thing. How could she say such a thing? As a matter of fact, we have a whole discussion in the Torah. There's one of the mitzvahs called a Nesis Umediach, who's a person who encourages other people to serve idols. So how is it possible to say that Nami would tell Rus and Arpa, go back to your gods? What, it's over? It's finished? Now that's it. Judaism was until this point. Now you're going back to being an idol worshiper. In Judaism, once you're a Jew, you're always a Jew. You could stand on your head and spit wooden nickels and cross yourself 1,000 times. You're still a Jew. So how could Nami tell her daughter-in-laws that they should go back to their gods? And you should know that this bothers me, even if you say they were non-Jewish. But a Jew is not allowed to encourage a non-Jew to worship idols, so it's a little bit difficult what Nami was saying. But certainly, if you learn that these two ladies were Jewish, how could Nami say such a thing? Additionally, Nami says to the girls, while she's trying to persuade them not to come with her, she says, Ha'odli manim b'me'ai, do I still have a child or children in my stomach? Va'yulachem la'anashim, so that they could one day marry you? What Nami was saying is, Nami was pointing out that there's a concept or a mitzvah in the Torah called Yibum. What's Yibum? It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Yibum is, if a person is married to a woman, you have a young couple, God forbid, they're childless, they have no children, and tragically the husband passes away. So there's a mitzvah on the brother of the deceased to marry the widow. It's not compulsory, but it would have to be, you know, both of the two sides would have to be unanimously want to marry one another, but there is a mitzvah. So Nami is telling her two daughter-in-laws, even if I had a child in my stomach right now, would you wait for that child to do Yibum to marry you? That could be decades. But I don't. I have no children inside of me. So why do you want to come with me? What's your connection to me? There's no more connection to me anymore. So what are you doing? That's what Nami tells the girls. Now, what's very strange about that is, what's kind of weird about that is, that there's a big problem with this. Because what's actually the halacha? Imagine for a moment you have a woman. Let's call the woman Sarah. She's married to a fellow. His name is Avraham. And they're married for 2 years. And sadly, Avraham dies tragically in a car accident. So now Sarah is all alone. And really, Sarah could go get married. She's a widow and she could try to start her life over. But she finds out that her mother-in-law is pregnant with a boy. She went to visit Dr. Josh Siegel. He took a little peek, and he was able to tell that the baby is a boy. So now, does she have to wait until this child becomes an adult, and then that child could go and do Yibum, could go and marry her? The answer actually is she can't wait for that child, because she's never allowed to marry this child. That's called, in the terms of the Gemara, Eishes Achiv Shelohaya Be'olama. The wife of a brother who never was in this world, he was in his mother's tummy. There's no Yibum in that situation whatsoever. So interestingly enough, it doesn't even make sense what Nami was telling the girls. She says, Rus and Arpa, if I had a child in my tummy, would you wait to do Yibum? What do you mean, would you wait to do Yibum? You can't do Yibum anyways. There is no Yibum if it's an unborn child. If the child is an unborn fetus, you're not allowed to do Yibum in that situation. So how could that even happen? To what was Nami saying? So Rashi says, nah, don't worry about it. Machlon and Kilio married two women that weren't Jewish. So in theory, if they wanted to, they could have waited to marry this younger brother had Nami been pregnant. So what do you see from this Rashi? Rashi learns that Machlon and Kilio married two non-Jewish women. So the whole concept of Yibam doesn't even apply. Because if they were Jewish women, and Nami was pregnant, they would never be able to marry this fellow, even if they wanted to marry someone 20 years younger than them. It wouldn't happen. So it seems from Rashi quite explicitly that Machlon and Kilio married two non-Jewish women, at least Rashi's opinion. In addition to that, there's a very interesting Gemara in Meseches Yevamos. The Gemara highlights the discussion between Naomi and her daughter-in-law Ruth. We know that they accompany Naomi part a little bit of the way towards the land of Israel. And she turns around, she says, girls, go back. There's no reason for you to come with me. There's no life for you with me in Israel. And Arpa agrees and she goes back. But Ruth says, no. Ruth says, Amech Ami, your nation is my nation. Elokayich Elokai, your God is my God. So if you look carefully in the Pasukim, you look carefully in the verses, so Nami says a few things to Rus. And when she says these few things to Rus, The Gemara derives multiple halachos of what one needs to inform a potential non-Jewish person that wants to convert. What does she tell her? She says to her, Asher telchi eilech, where I go, you will go. And the Gemara there says she was hinting to her one of the mitzvos, which is the mitzvah of Techum Shabbos. On Shabbos, a person is not allowed to go more than 2,000 amos outside of the city limits. So she was saying, Basher telchi eilech, if you want to become part of the Jewish people, understand something, you're going to be limited how far you could leave the community every single Shabbos. Only 2,000 amos. Those of you that have been learning Mishnayos Erev with me daily, no, we talked a lot about Techum Shabbos many, many times about it. So that was halacha number one that she was saying, Basher telchi eilech. She says to her more than that. She says to her, Asher talini alim, where I sleep, you will sleep. Says the Gemara, she was teaching her the laws of Yichud. What are the laws of Yichud? That a man and a woman that are not husband and wife or related are not allowed to be together in a secluded area. So she was telling her the halachos of Yichud, Basher talini alim. The Gemara goes through and says a bunch of different halachos that Rus, that Nami was telling Rus. Why? Because before Nami was able to tell Rus anything, before she was ready to convert, she had to tell her some of the halachos. You have to teach a convert some of the laws so that when they become a convert, they start the process, they know what they're getting into. Why are they converting? Why is Rus converting? She was a Jew. According to the opinions that learned that she was a Jew and that Machlon and Kilion would never have married someone that didn't convert, what's the problem? Why do you have to tell her anything? She's already a bona fide Jew. It seems like she's teaching her about Judaism because she's going to have to convert when she gets to the land of Israel. So that's strange. So was she a Jew or was she not a Jew? Did she convert or did she not convert? In addition to that, the Gemara says in Meseches Yevamos, I'm sorry, the Gemara in Meseches Baba Basra, the Gemara says, and Sadi Aleph on the Beis 91b, the Gemara says, Machlon and Kilion had different names. Their names were Yoash and Saraf. But they were called Machlon and Kilion. I should say they're called Machlon and Kilion. They had two additional names, Yoash and Saraf. Says Gemara, what does Yoash and Saraf mean? So the Gemara says, Yoash, one of them was called Yoash, Shenisya'ish Mina HaGe'ula. He had given up on the Jewish people seeing redemption, on the hunger going away, and the Jewish people being restored to their former glory. Saraf, Shenischaivu, Sreifa, Lamako. That they deserved to be killed by the Almighty. Why? Because they did what they were not supposed to. They married people that they shouldn't have married. Again, it seems like they shouldn't have married them. They were not Jewish. On the other side, the Gemara says in Meseches Baba Basra and Tzadi Alf Amad Alf, the previous Amud, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, right? We all know about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We just spoke about Lag BaOmer. He says that the death of Machlon and Kilion, that says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, know something. They were Gedolei Hadar. They were the greats of the generation. You know why they died? Because they left Israel. A regular person that lives Israel is not punishable by death. Maybe the Gemara says if a person lives Israel, they violate a negative commandment. You have to know it's a shear in itself if you have what the parameters of living in Eretz Yisrael are. But it says because Machlon and Kilion were such greats, because they were so holy, their leaving Israel in God's eyes was considered a capitally punishable sin. And therefore, Machlon and Kilion died because they left Israel. That's Midos Chasidus. Midas Chasidus means a level of great piousness where a person is held accountable, even perhaps if they do things that, even if they do things which are not usually accountable for. And the Rambam actually, the Rambam writes this, the Rambam says that they were punished because they left the land of Israel. Now, if they had married women that they were not allowed to marry, they had married non-Jewish women, that's definitely in the Jewish world or in the Torah considered something much more substantial than leaving Eretz Yisrael. Yet the Gemara says they were great people and on a small sin of leaving Israel, they were punished. So what happened? Did they marry converts? Did they not marry converts? What exactly is happening over here? We need to understand this. And then finally, the Zohar HaKadosh says, Chas v'shalom, shenasa Machlon v'kilyon v'higayim. God forbid to say that Machlon and Kilyon married them before they became Jews. Ela kishenasa niskaira. They converted, I should say differently. It says when he married Rus, she converted. So it seems like they did convert. Which is fascinating, by the way. Who wrote the Zohar? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai wrote the Zohar. And his opinion is congruous with what he says in Meseches Baba Basra. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that they were great, so they certainly only married Jews. So why were they held accountable? Because they left the land of Israel. It's just interesting that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has the same opinion, both in the Gemara as well as in the Zohar, in the Nigla, in the revealed Torah, as well as the Nista, the hidden Torah. So how do we reconcile this? What happened? Because it just seems that there's so many conflicting and contradictory commentaries. How many, you know, what happened? Did they marry Jews or not? Did they convert or didn't they? It just seems so much back and forth. So I'm going to share with you a fascinating explanation, which is really beautiful and also so interesting halachically. And I'll give you a small little introduction to this. When I need to ask big ticket questions, which are kind of halachic questions that are way beyond my pay grade. So one of the people that I very much appreciate calling and also was considered one of America's foremost poskim is Reb David Cohn. Reb David Cohn is a rav in New York, a senior rabbi in New York, and he's consulted definitely on some of the greatest questions in the Jewish world. I don't know if you saw, but the OU had Reb David Cohn's signature at the bottom of their shul closings and a lot of different things. They've gone to Reb David Cohn. Interesting, Rabbi Unterman told me he also speaks to Reb David Cohn pretty often. So yesterday, I called Reb David Cohn, about a shaila. And the thing I love most about calling Reb David Cohn is that he has two phones. They're both on speaker. So he picks up one phone and he says, "What's your question?" You ask him the question, but usually 2 seconds in, the other phone rings. So he picks that phone up and he says, "Please hold the line," but he leaves it on speaker. So you get to hear the dialogue of the other question that's being asked. And I have heard some of the most fascinating questions in halacha, and even better, some of the most fascinating answers in Jewish law. Anyways, I was fortunate to hear a 10-minute question and forth and back between a parents of a young man and Reb David Cohn. Basically, they called him to ask him, it seems like their son was interested in going out with a particular girl where she was probably a convert, and there were some issues in her conversion, and they first of all wanted to know what he recommended. Is it a good idea to marry a ger or not to marry a convert? So Reb David Cohn is a very sharp man. He said, "Why don't you ask me if I like spaghetti?" And they're like, "What?" He goes, "Spaghetti is a preference. Some people like it, some people don't." He says, "Well, if you asked me that question, I wouldn't have to answer it, would I? I could just tell you it's none of your business." He says, "Why are you asking me if you should marry a convert? Some people feel it's a good idea, some people feel it don't. It's not halacha. The Torah says, v'ahavtem es ager, you should show special affection to the ger. And some people feel like, oh, I want my kid to marry someone who had a Jewish upbringing. What are you asking me for? What do you want from me?" And by the way, Reb David Cohn's a little bit sharp, but he's also incredibly soft and nice when he needs to be soft and nice. So why do I say this? Because it seems like one of the conversion issues was that maybe the child, the prospective woman that their son wanted to date was converted when she was a child. And Reb David Cohn started to discuss with them the halachos of something, a very fascinating Gemara Maseches Ksubos called Ger Katan. What's Ger Katan? Ger Katan is a child that converts even before their bar mitzvah, maybe even when they're very, very young. So what's the halachos of Ger Katan? What are the laws of Ger Katan? So the Gemara teaches us in Maseches Ksubos that a ger katan, that a little child, has a problem. Because we know for a male to convert to Judaism, there are three prerequisites. They need to have a bris, they have to go to the mikvah, and they also have to accept upon themselves the mitzvahs of the Torah. If a kid is two, they could have a circumcision. They could even go to the mikvah somehow. But they definitely can't accept upon themselves all the mitzvahs of the Torah. They don't know them. And even if they do, they're not in the mind frame where they could say that what they say really counts. A woman, let's say it's a giyores ketana, so she only has two things that she has to do to convert. She needs to go to the mikvah, and she needs to accept about herself all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Also there, you're missing one, which is that you don't have the child, you don't have the child accepting upon himself mitzvahs. I'm going to take a 10-second break. My laptop is dying. I just want to plug it in. Stay tight. All right, I'm back. So how does conversion work for a katan? So how do we do it? Because the Gemara says that ger katan, a small child who's converting, we could do it. So how does it work exactly? So that's a very, very long and complicated discussion in the Gemara in Maseches Ksubos. And I'll share with you just a little bit of the Gemara. So the Gemara says like this. Ger katan, a small child, a child who's under bar mitzvah, boy or girl that's under bar mitzvah. The Gemara says that matbilin oso al das bezdin. The intent of the Bezdin, of the Jewish court, is sufficient. So you have a little child that wants to convert. As long as the Beis Din, the Jewish court, does it, it works. Says the Gemara, but what do you mean? Still, the child didn't accept upon themselves all the mitzvahs. Says the Gemara, it works with a classification called zechiyah. Zechiyah means that I can do something for somebody else, even if they don't know about it, if it's meritorious for them. The Gemara teaches us, zachin la'adam, shelo b'farav, literally translated, one can acquire something on someone else's behalf if it's for their benefit. So I'm going to give you a classic example of this. So often in shul, on Shabbos, the rabbi wants to give a gift to the bar mitzvah boy. But the halacha is you're not allowed to give a gift on Shabbos. The halacha, you're not allowed to give a gift on Shabbos. You can't acquire objects on Shabbos. So how does one give a gift on Shabbos? So what happens is before Shabbos, the rabbi, or the sisterhood president, or whoever it may possibly be, goes to somebody else in the shul and says, please be zoche this, please acquire this on behalf of the bar mitzvah boy before Shabbos, so that the bar mitzvah boy can have it on Shabbos. Now, what do you mean? Maybe the bar mitzvah boy doesn't like that sefer. He wanted money, and the shul's giving him a book. Teretz says, it's still a schus, it's a merit for a person to have svarim, to every Jewish person is supposed to have a Jewish library, as in the case of Michael Goldrich, who gets a big shout out for the largest Jewish library in Middlesex County, probably. Maybe. So bottom line is, so how does it work? The answer is it works with zechiyah. The person acquires it on your behalf. Says the Gemara, that when we do this conversion for the child is meriting. It's a schus for the child. Now they're going to become part of the chosen people. They'll have the opportunity to do so many mitzvos. So that's how a regular gerus works. So the Gemara says, Mila and Tevila, Bris Mila and Tevila. You could say, listen, I'm doing the bris for the kid. I'm even putting the kid in the mikvah because it's a schus for him. But how about Kabbalah's mitzvos? You can't accept mitzvos on someone's behalf. You can't say, oh, they want to do it. They want it. It doesn't work that way. They have to do it themselves. So how does that work? So here, Tosfos in Maseches Sanhedrin says something very interesting. And by the way, on Facebook, I just got an LOL from Judy Goldrich, just putting it out there. So anyways, if I could touch my screen, I would give you a thumbs up. So anyways, so how does Kabbalah's HaMitzvos work? How can one become a ger when one is a child? So Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that even though Tosfos' opinion is that all three parameters necessary for conversion for a boy are ma'akev, if you're missing one of them, it doesn't work. So Tosfos' opinion is that a kid has to have a bris, has to have mikvah, and also has to accept the mitzvahs upon themselves. Nevertheless, if a kid converts when they're young, we do it with the future knowledge that when this child becomes older and continues to practice Judaism, that's their Kabbalah mitzvahs. That's their accepting their mitzvahs. So we're kind of looking at it with an eye on the future. You know what? Look, you're going to convert you now, but in the future, when you get older and you continue to be a Jewish person, that's your Kabbalah mitzvahs. That's accepting your mitzvahs. Now, by the way, we know that if a ger katan, a young child that converts, decides when they become a gadol, when they become bar mitzvah, that they don't want to be a ger, they don't want to be a Jew, it's not a conversion. They have a right to do that. Rabbi Cohn actually said something which I was not so aware of. I thought that this was something, but he said it's not true. Although according to Tosfos, it seems it is. Rabbi Cohn said that many people say that when a kid who converts when they're a child, when it comes bar bat mitzvah, you have to ask them, do you want to remain a Jew? And if they say yes, they're in. And if they say no, they're out. That's not true. The kid does not have to have a proactive yes. All they have to do is continue practicing as a Jew. If they decide at some point and say, I don't want to be a Jew, well, then retroactively it takes away their gerus initial. You have to know when they could do that. Could they do that 10 years later? All of a sudden, they're like, oh, I'm in the mood of a cheeseburger. They're 23 years old. And they're like, okay, that's it. The gerus is over retroactively. Philly cheesesteak city, here we come. You know, that's a question when you could do that. You have to ask your local halachic authority. Actually, Rabbi Cohen, at the end of the conversation, recommended that they call Rabbi Willig's Beis Din for conversion, the RCA's Beis Din for conversion, which he felt was the gold standard of conversion, just saying, which is very interesting to hear that from Rabbi Cohen. Wonderful to hear that as well. So anyways, so that's Kabbalah HaMitzvos. So now, let's hear something interesting. So what happens if a girl is 11 years old, and in those days, halachically, a child could get married as well. The child's a ger katan. They converted when they were 3. Now they're 11, and they're not yet bas mitzvah. Before they're bas mitzvah, they haven't hit maturity yet. Could that child marry a Jew? You want to marry the child off to a 13-year-old boy, which, by the way, was the custom in the Jewish community for 1,000 years, even if they didn't live together as husband and wife. But because they were married, that exempted them from a lot of persecution and potential problems, such as being drafted into the army. So could you do that? Could they get married? So the Bach writes, you're not allowed to do it. Why? Because if you marry the child when they're 11, and then 2 years later or a year later, the child says, oh, I don't want to be a convert, then you married someone you weren't allowed to marry. The kid wasn't a Jew. So therefore, says the Bach, the kid cannot marry a Jewish person. At that point, you have to wait till the kid is bar bas mitzvah, and only then can marriage actually happen. That's the opinion of the Bach. What does this have to do with the price of tea in China? Well, we'll see it has a lot to do with it. Not the price of tea in China, but it has to do with the sugya that we're talking about. Listen carefully, and you'll hear how beautiful things fit together. Tosus in Maseches Nazir says, how old was Rus? How old was Ruth when she converted? So Tosfos says, if you make a calculation according to the genealogy and the generations that are listed inside of the Navi, Rus was a ketana. She converted when she was, before she was of 12 years old, before she was a gedola, before she was a mature woman to be able to accept this. So it comes out like this. According to the opinion in the Gemara, that Machlon and Kilion were tzaddikim, yeah, they married Rus and Arpa, but they didn't marry them before they converted. They converted. They were Jewish girls, and they married them. So you can't have like the Zohar writes, you can't hold something against them. They converted properly. We'll see in a minute how properly. So therefore, the halacha is that they married Jewish women. They didn't intermarry. They were considered leaders of the Jewish people. That wasn't something that they necessarily did. However, what happened after their husbands died? Because they died shortly after. And now, Rus and Arpa are all alone. So what do? So Navi comes to them and she says to them, understand something, girls. You converted when you were children. You don't have to stay. You could just go back to where you came from. Because if you say, I don't want to be a Jew anymore, I don't want to be converted anymore, that retroactively removes your conversion. You never were a Jew to begin with. So what does Navi say? Navi turns back and says, Shov Nabonaisai. Go back, my daughters. It's okay. It's fine. You don't have to be Jews if you don't want. Arpa takes her up on the offer. And what does Arpa do? She makes a 180. She goes back to her previous way of life. So what do you mean? I didn't want to convert anyways when I was a child. It's okay. But Rus says, no. Amech Ami, your nation is my nation. Elokayich Elokai, your God is my God. And she remains, confirms her Kabbalah Samitzvos, that she wants to be a Jew. That's how she's confirming her mitzvos. At that point is the final step in the process of her conversion, where she accepts upon herself to keep all the mitzvos of the Torah. And she becomes Rus, who in the future ends up marrying Boaz. Again, for Yibum, we'll talk about that in a second. And everyone lives happily thereafter. David HaMelech comes from this marriage. But here's the issue. So why do we hold it against Machlon and Kilion? Because they shouldn't have married them, even if they converted when they were kids. But what happens if later in life they decide they don't want the conversion? Retroactively, that removes the conversion that was there. So they were playing with fire. And look what happened. Arpa did. Arpa removed that conversion from her retroactively, and comes out that her husband married someone he shouldn't have married. Ruth's husband was okay because she agreed. So from these halachos of Ruth reaffirming her Judaism, being mekabel mitzvos as a gedola, as someone who was past bar mitzvah, we learn a lot of halachas of gerus. Because Navi is saying, listen, this is what's going to show if you really, really want to be a Jew. There's nothing binding you anymore. Your husband's not here. It's just an old widow who's penniless. If you say you still want to be a Jew, then we'll know retroactively that your kabbalas are mitzvos, that accepting the mitzvos worked even when you were a kid, and you'll be a bona fide Jewish person. And we see halachically that that's what happened. Because what happens when Rus arrives in Eretz Yisrael? There's the whole story with Boaz. Who's Boaz? He ends up doing Yibum. He's the Redeemer. And from that union, which, by the way, Boaz died the next day, she became pregnant, though. And her pregnancy ultimately caused the birth of David HaMelech of King David. So this explanation is beautiful. It kind of puts everything together. Even those people that want to prove that they married them when they weren't Jewish, it doesn't mean to say they weren't literally Jewish. It just means to say they converted, but they didn't have kabbalas and mitzvot, so there was always the threat of it's not working retroactively. So really, everyone agrees, but that's what happened with Nami, that's what happened with us. However, right, and that's actually what Nami was telling her. She says, if I had a child in my tummy, would you be able to marry my child? Would you be able to do Yibum? So if they were Jewish, you could do Yibum. So we said, so some say, what she was saying is like this. In theory, you could marry this kid. Why? Because you could just deny your conversion retroactively. Comes out you were never married to his brother. You wait till he's older. You could marry him. It won't be a mitzvah of Yibum, but you could marry him because you were never married. You'll convert again and you'll marry the child in my tummy. But she says, Nami, I don't have a child in my tummy. So if that's what you're waiting for, that ain't going to happen. That's how some want to explain. So that's the opinion number one. That's the first understanding of the sugya. There's one more opinion, and with this we will conclude. So the Rambam is a very famous Rambam. In Hilchas Isuri Bia, the Rambam, when he speaks about people that you're not allowed to marry, the Rambam is bothered by two great figures in Jewish history. Number one, Shimshon HaGibar. We know that Shimshon married a Plishti woman, right? Delilah, that's who he married. And Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo married the daughter of Paro. So the Rambam wonders what happened over there. So let me read you the words of the Rambam. Obviously, I'll translate them. The Rambam in Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Yudalid, chapter 13, Halacha 14, in Surah Bia, the Rambam says like this: Al Yale Al Datcha, don't think she Shimshon Hamoshias Yisrael, that Samson, Shimshon that saved the Jewish people, O Shlomo Melech Yisrael, or King Solomon who was the king, she Nikra Yedid Hashem. Shlomo Hamelech's name was Yedidya, just like mine. Shlomo Yedidya. That's why I have two names because of this. Nasu Nashim Nachru, says Shlomo HaMelech, says the Rambam, don't think that they married women that they weren't allowed to be Yusam before they converted. Ela Soda Davar Kachi, let me tell you the secret, says the Rambam. Sheha Mitzvah HaNechona, here's the appropriate mitzvah. Kishiyavo HaGera HaGiyoris Liskayer, when a non-Jewish person comes and they want to convert, Bod Kinachara, we have to investigate them. Shema Biglam Mamon Sheyito, maybe becoming a Jew will help financially enrich them. They could get a job that maybe wasn't accessible before. Obishvil Srara Shayiskala, maybe they're looking for a position of power, they want the Jewish vote. Omneha Pachad, maybe they're scared of religious persecution where they are, and they want to become a Jew where they know they'll be protected by their Jewish brothers and sisters. More than that, he says, in issue, if it's a man, both Kinacharav Shema Einav Nasam Beisha Yehudis, if it's a non-Jewish man, we check to make sure that the reason he's converting isn't because he has his eyes on a Jewish girl. Vimisha, and if she's a woman, both Kin Shema Einav Nasam Bachar Bachar Yisrael, she's a non-Jewish woman come to convert. Maybe she's converting because she's got her eyes on a nice yeshiva bacher. Maybe that's what's happening. Im lo nimtzal ham ila, if let's say we have nothing to substantiate this. There's no way to substantiate it. There's no guys in their life, no girl, Jewish girl in their life, no potential job. They have a great job. They're not involved in politics. They don't even know who the president of the United States is. If you don't find anything, Modino son Kovet Ola Torah. Then we teach them about the difficulties, or I should say the challenges of keeping a Torah way of life. The Torah Shiesh Basiyasa. And the constant focus that a person has to have as a Jewish person. Im Kiblu Velo Pirshu, if they accept the Torah and they don't walk away, Vero such a chasu me'ava, and we see that they're doing it for altruistic reasons. They love Hashem, they love Torah, they love mitzvos, they love the Jewish people. Then says the Rambam, we accept him. When Nami saw that Rus was insisting, she said, come with me. Okay, I see you're legit. I see you're genuine. Lefichach says the Rambam, because of that, lo kiblu bezdin gerim kol yimei David v'shlomo. The Jewish court didn't accept converts in the days of King David and King Solomon. Bimei David sheva min ha-pachad chazur, in the days of David, because of his tremendous power, maybe they were converting out of fear. They wanted to be front runners. And maybe during the days of Shlomo, they began to convert because of the prosperity of the Jewish people. Maybe. Because anyone that becomes a Jew for non-altruistic reasons, just for some other reason, etc., etc. Nevertheless, this is the main point. Nevertheless, there were many people that converted in the days of Shlomo. If they had Yotos, not in front of the Jewish court. They got together a few rabbis, they did a conversion. And He says, so what happened to those people? The Jewish court accepted them, but they still accepted them suspiciously. Maybe they're real. Maybe they're not. Let's see how they live. Are they careful? Are they meticulous? Are they learning? Are they growing? If yes, they could be there. Lefish Giyar Shlomo Nashim Benasam. So he says Shlomo HaMelech and Shimshon both converted the women that they wanted to marry. And everyone knew that they did this, that these women converted for this. They weren't done by the Jewish court. So the Torah says, the Navi writes, that maybe they were Nashim Nachrios, they were non-Jewish women. So bottom line is like this. The conversion that they had was at a time where there were no conversions, where the Jewish court, the Beis Din, was not doing any conversions. And it wasn't done by the Beis Din, and maybe it was done for altruistic reasons. So the Torah calls them, the Navi calls both the daughter of Paro that Shlomo HaMelech married a Nachri, a non-Jewish woman, as well as the wife of Shimshon, but they did both convert. Explains the Bach in his commentary on Mezgilas Rus that that's what happened. These two girls and these two guys wanted to get married. Machlon and Kilion wanted to marry these princesses, and the princesses wanted them to marry these kids of very prestigious Jewish families. They knew that prestige this family had, but there was no best in there. So Elimelech, who was a great Torah scholar, and Machlon and Kilion, they did the conversion. So on one hand, the Pasuk calls them Nachrios, which means to say non-Jews, because the conversion was less than desirable. But on the other hand, maybe they were legit, and that would give them a certain sense of credibility. And that's exactly what happens. Arpa ends up displaying that the conversion was not legit, and that the conversion that Elimelech and Machlon and Kilion had done was not appropriate. And Rus ends up showing, look, I know maybe this wasn't done by a Jewish court, but it was done with the proper intentions. And look, I'm leaving my glory, the palace, where I'm a princess, and I'm embarking upon a mission of becoming part of Klal Yisrael. Amich, Ami, your nation is my nation. Elokayach Elokai, your God is my God. And from there on, Rus becomes the legendary Gioras, the legendary convert. And we model our conversions based on many, many of the things in Rus's life. I do want to make one disclaimer before we conclude that the sugya of Gerus, the idea, the concept of conversion in America in 2020 is extremely, extremely complex. Just to give a little window into how conversion works in the RCA's Beis Din, if a man or woman approaches the RCA's Beis Din and says that they want to convert, first of all, they have to display why they want to convert. They have to find a sponsoring rabbi who kind of guides them for a year at least while they live as Jews for that year, while they learn, keep Shabbos, to what they're allowed to do, daven, become part of the Jewish community. And they also meet with the Beis Din many times, and the Beis Din does research to make sure that they're 100% sincere. After a long process, usually at least a year or maybe even 2 years, if there's still authenticity and there's a genuine desire from the person to convert, then they go ahead with the conversion. Whether they will accept someone who's converting for marriage is very complex as well. There's no straight answer to that. One thing is pretty clear, that the convert does need Kabbalah and mitzvah, so they have to accept upon themselves to keep Shabbos and kosher and many other mitzvahs. And if we see a few months afterwards that they're not keeping it, it makes a lot of issues and problems in the future. So the sugya of conversion is very complex. And that's why, personally, I don't do conversions. Anyone who calls me about it, I say there's a wonderful Beis Din for conversions in North Jersey, in Teaneck, and also in the city, and that's Rabbi Willix Beis Din. The secretary of the Beis Din is a good friend of mine, so I have a little bit of an in over there. But the sugya is incredibly complex. But like we began, regardless of if a person does convert, there's a special mitzvah, the mitzvah of Ahavta Mesnager, of showing affection to a person that left, I guess you could say, the easier life and embraced the more complicated life. And that's something very special, where a person becomes a Jew by choice, similar to Klal Yisrael and Matan Torah, when we became Jews by choice, partially. We said Naaseh V'Nishma. So Hashem should help us that this coming Shavuos, whether we're Jews from birth or we're not, that we go before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we say we want to re-accept the Torah out of will, Kabbalah, and mitzvos, out of love, and upgrade our commitment and show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're in this for the long haul, and a mitzvah of each and every one of us. We'll have a beautiful Shabbos and a beautiful Shavuos. We're going to have a Shir Mitzvah next Tuesday, something Shavuos related. But before I sign off, please, if you're interested, you're invited to stop by Torah Links between 5 and 6 this Friday to pick up some challenge. We're having a challenge drive through and it's free. That's almost as close as one could get to Gan Eden. So please stop by, enjoy some of Shandy's delicious chalent. There'll be cold drinks as well. Actually, there's actually going to be cold beer as well for those people that bring their own beers. So please feel free to join us. A hop on board. It would be great to see everybody. Have a wonderful evening. And if I don't see you before Shabbos, have a great Shabbos as well.
Shkoyach.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Thank you.